From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory, welcome to Charlotte Talks. Sitting in for Mike Collins, I'm Chris Clackham. Pollinators like honeybees are crucial to the U.S. food supply, needless to say. About $30 billion a year in agriculture depends on their health. Besides making honey, honeybees pollinate more than 90 crops, a variety of fruits and vegetables that include apples, nuts, avocados, soybeans, asparagus, broccoli, citrus fruit, cranberries. About one-third of the human diet comes from insect-pollinated plants, and the honeybee is responsible for 80% of that pollination. So when someone says something's killing the honeybees, I guess we'd all better take notice. That's definitely what our guests are doing. Dr. David Tarpey is associate professor and an extension apiculturalist in the Department of Entomology at North Carolina State University. His research includes the ecology of insect societies, beekeeping, pollination research, bee biology. Joining us by phone this morning, Dr. Tarpey, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Gary Pierce is an extension agent in the Horticulture Department of the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service. Gary develops educational programs for forestry, commercial horticulture, agritourism, master gardener volunteers, beekeeping, voluntary agricultural district ordinance, and consumer horticulture. Gary, thanks for joining us as well. You're in studio up there in Durham?
In Chapel Hill, yes,
in
sir.
In Chapel Hill. Thanks so much for joining us. Greg Clements is also joining us. He's a certified master beekeeper, past president of the North Carolina Beekeepers Association from Denver. Greg, thanks for driving down and being with us here in studio.
Oh, thank you, Chris, and good morning to you, too.
Where do we stand? Let me start with you, Dr. Tarpey. Where do we stand in the investigation of what's killing the honeybees?
Well, we're kind of in a holding pattern, unfortunately, that the early research that was looking into many of the possible impacts on honeybee decline in health resulted in finding no single smoking gun. There are many factors that negatively impact honeybee health, and those early investigations that are really trying to find a single cause found that it really wasn't a single thing, but rather some sort of complex combination of many different factors, which has caused the investigations to become much more complex and therefore much more difficult to find an answer.
What are those other factors? What are the combination of things that might be leading to the kill-off of the honeybee population?
Well, there's far too many to list, but I'll just try to categorize them into kind of three main groups that most people have been investigating. First and foremost is some sort of pathogen or parasite, something dealing with disease. And there are, as any of our other guests here could tell you, a very large number of parasites that cause ill health among honeybees. So that's a very complex issue in and of itself. The second area is some sort of nutritional stress, that is that bees don't have nearly as much forage and food for them to go out to flowers and find the nutritional requirements that they need. This is particularly a problem in large-scale monocultures where bees don't encounter a wide variety of different flowers for them to sustain themselves. And then the third area, which has always been an issue when it comes to beneficial insects like honeybees, and that is environmental contaminants, namely pesticides, that could play a role either directly or indirectly in bee ill health.
Gary Pierce, jump in here, especially on the subject of pesticides. That has long been suspected as being behind colony collapse disorder.
Actually, in the beginning, once they got off cell phones as the primary cause, then they did start to focus. It seemed anyway that the primary focus was on pesticides. And as Dr. Tarpey said, surely they play a role. And the way that I at least the things that I have to deal with, people that I have to deal with, the educational information that I distribute is relative to the impact that homeowners have versus farmers. So while pesticides that some farmers apply may impact the bees, I think that the pesticides that homeowners apply is where we can make a big difference as far as managing those pesticides and helping homeowners understand that they're having an impact in this situation via pesticides.
Greg Clements, as a beekeeper, so we have a couple of candidates here as to what's causing colony collapse disorder. Parasitic mite, multiple viruses, bacteria, poor nutrition, habitat loss, pesticides. Is any one more of a viable candidate in your mind over the others?
I would say no to that because of the studies that the university consortium has done hasn't indicated that any of those are, as David said, any of those are the number one smoking gun. And Penn State University, I think it's Penn State, did a study, and they indicated that there was something like 50 or 60 pesticides that were incorporated into the wax of a beehive. So these pesticides, because they're incorporated into the wax, they just continue to build up. So it becomes a problem. What may have been safe in the pesticide world a few years ago, as it builds up in the wax, may no longer be safe for the bees.
Does this, Dr. Tarpey, make it harder to try to figure out what to do about colony collapse disorder because you have so many possible reasons for it happening?
Exactly right. I think, you know, if there was a single factor that was very strongly associated with, you know, bees dying off, then we'd be able to address that. But because there are all these confounding factors that interact with each other, it's very hard to kind of standardize the environment. You know, as Greg just said, that there's so many complex pesticides and other issues going into, you know, a colony that trying to standardize that environment in order to test exactly which interactions are most important is exceedingly difficult to do.
But it's not like this has been going on. Colony collapse disorder, the problem with killing off of honeybees, has been going on for centuries or decades. It's only been going on since about 2006. So it would seem to me that you could pinpoint one particular cause over the other.
Well, I would disagree slightly with that in the sense that 2006 is when it gained a lot of media attention. But before that, and Greg and Gary can certainly attest to this, beekeepers have been screaming for help for all sorts of reasons for many decades prior to that. So, you know, the equating the media prominence of this issue is with the actual symptoms themselves is not actually accurate. And so, you know, there wasn't kind of this one day there was no CCD and the next day there was. It's been this ongoing evolving issue for any number of problems. For example, the introduction of these parasitic mites in the mid-80s was horrifically problematic and still the number one problem for bee management today. The only distinction between problems of colony health due to parasitic mites, to pesticides, to nutritional problems that CCD is different from is the sense that we don't know the underlying cause or causes of these kind of mysterious losses compared to the reasons why bees have been dying for decades that we do know about.
And Dr. Tarpey, just to put in a plug for NC State University, NC State has been at the forefront of the investigation, of the research as it relates to pollinators, not just in North Carolina, but in around the world.
Yeah, exactly. Again, because there's so many facets to this problem, you know, we have been studying, you know, certain important areas, specifically when it comes to honeybee queens, which are the most important individuals within the colonies. So trying to improve queen health goes a long way to improving colony health, as well as using modern-day genetics to try to elucidate some of these underlying factors.
There is a bee breeding program at NC State?
Well, we don't have a breeding program in the sense that we are selecting particular stock in order to address these various problems. But we do use breathing techniques to try to understand how the natural mating biology and the natural biology of honeybees can help them help themselves to fight off infection and other problems.
The fact of the matter is, though, Gary Pierce, an extension agent with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Agency, the fact is that we're losing, on average, about a third of the honeybee population every fall. Do I understand that correctly?
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Why the fall? Why the fall? I mean, why is it tied to the calendar that way?
Well, I don't know exactly why it would be the fall. And in Harnett County, it seems to be sort of equally spread throughout the wintertime. So a lot of times in Harnett County, what we're observing is that it appears to be connected to food supplies a lot of times. And here in the past couple of years, weather seems to have also played a role because, the warm days and so forth, they'll use up their food supplies and then have issues not only in the winter but even in early springs. As a matter of fact, a lot of the beekeepers in Harnett County tend to think the worst time is going to be in March, right before the nectar starts to flow, as far as critical for watching your bees and preventing the colony from collapsing at that point.
Greg Clements, you want to jump in?
Sure. I think part of the problem, too, could be the beekeeper itself. When Dr. Tarpey alluded to the varroa mite that was out there in the 1980s and the 1990s, because we had a hard time trying to control that beast, we ended up using pesticides to try to kill a pest but not kill the bee. And generally, we used an insecticide. Well, an insecticide doesn't really care what insect it's trying to kill. Some of the varroa mite became resistant to what we had been using, and so now we use different ones. And so now we've ourselves have taken some responsibility because we have introduced a whole series of chemicals to the bees that 40 years ago, no beekeeper would ever use chemicals on a bee. Our dynamic has changed, too, in that. So we stand to share part of the problem.
Something our other guest alluded to, though, Greg, that I'd like to ask you about, climate change. Is there any evidence that climate change may be playing a role in this?
I personally don't see that yet, and I've never read a study that says that. But I will say, this past summer, we have had just a ton of rain in our area, actually over all of North Carolina. And that affects the bees from the viewpoint that the bees can't fly in the rain. The rain washes out the nectar, so the bees can't collect the nectar like they have been doing. This year was actually a very poor year for honey. Most of the beekeepers that I know got very little honey.
And because?
Because the rain washed it all out and the bee can't fly in the rain, and we had rain every other day or sometimes every day. We had rain at one point for 11 days in a row. So now what do you do? Well, the bee, you have to feed the bee. And David kind of alluded to the fact that we've got these, excuse me, Dr. Tarpey. I meant to say Dr. Tarpey. We've kind of alluded to the fact that mono feed and things like that affect the bee. And so we're feeding them sugar syrup. It's the same feed throughout.
We're talking about pollinators on Charlotte Talks today, specifically the honeybees and what's happening to them. We're back with more on Charlotte Talks right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and UNC Charlotte's graduate programs in health informatics, a program for working professionals. Registration for an upcoming open house at hi.uncc.edu. And Coca-Cola Recycle and Win, an environmental partnership with the City of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County municipalities, designed to support and increase recycling in our region. Details at CokeRecycleAndWin.com. Bernard and Shirley Kinsey own one of the largest and most diverse private collections of African-American art and artifacts in the world. Their collection spans 400 years of the African-American experience and includes an early copy of the Emancipation Proclamation. They're lending their collection to the Harvey B. Gantt Center, and we'll talk about that and about the couple's philanthropic efforts when Charlotte Talks. That's tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Education Secretary Arne Duncan. As students head back to school, a discussion of Common Core standards, later school start times, and President Obama's college rating plan.
That's the topic on the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks. Here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. We're talking about the loss of pollinators in our planting today, and specifically about the loss of honeybees. Our guests include Dr. David Tarpey, associate professor at NC State University in the Department of Entomology. Gary Pierce is an extension agent with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Agency, and Greg Clements is a master beekeeper and past president of the North Carolina Beekeepers Association. Given all that, there was a recent federal report, which we just alluded to in the first segment, talking about all the reasons that may be contributing to colony collapse disorder amongst honeybees. European countries are reacting to this a heck of a lot differently than we are, aren't they, Dr. Tarpey?
Well, they are. That their regulatory agencies have decided to ban certain neonicotinoid pesticides that have been linked by certain studies to bee losses over there. And so they're being proactive when it comes to that, and our system is set up differently. And so the EPA in the U.S. is not following suit, because the requirements for such action, I think, are much higher than that.
But the shortage has become so great that I keep hearing stories about beekeepers, professional beekeepers around the country, who go out and rent their hives, especially to the big farmers, especially in places like Southern California, San Joaquin Valley, the American Valley, where they're growing all sorts of things. Greg Clements, do you rent out your hives?
I do not, but then again, I only have six hives, so that just serves my neighborhood and myself. I'm mainly in it for the honey, not to rent it out. But if you talk to somebody like David Hackenberry, he's the person that kind of first identified that something was going wrong, and it was the beginning of colony collapse disorder. At least that name was given to it. David Hackenberry is a commercial beekeeper. He's got something north of 1,200 hives. And he's got an 18-wheeler. He drives them from farm to farm to farm and pollinates the crops.
And gets paid accordingly.
He does. He does. You can make a living out of it if you have at least 1,000 hives.
Can you make a living out of it right now, especially?
Well, I think it's kind of difficult because, for example, David Hackenberry this past winter, he lost about 35% of all his hives. It's difficult to build that up. And he's been fighting that, as have all the commercial beekeepers. So he's not different than anybody else. But, you can't take a third. What business can withstand a third loss every year like that?
Before we get too far away from it, I need to ask Gary Pierce, an extension agent with the North Carolina Agricultural Extension Agency, this question: what can we do to attract honeybees?
Well, there's a tremendous amount we can do, and I'd like to address a couple of earlier comments that were made before I tell you about that. One thing to keep in mind, in North Carolina especially, is we discuss honeybees, and we think about honeybees. We immediately go to an image in our head of the commercial honey beekeepers that are in the West and are taking millions of hives out, to the almonds and the almond plantations and pollinating the flowers there, which they don't even get honey from. That's what we think of. But here in North Carolina, it's not exactly like that. The vast majority of the beekeepers in North Carolina are considered hobby beekeepers.
Right.
And so probably in the 90-95% range of the actual number of beekeepers are not commercial beekeepers. So I don't know exactly how to say if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I personally think it's a good thing because we have a lot of people working together on this problem and trying different things and contributing their knowledge and hands-on experience to this. So I think that's a good thing. It's also good in that when you have more people like that, you have more persistence built in. And so these beekeepers are come from all walks of life. There's no doubt about that. They're an amazing group of people. But they are very determined people, and this CCD thing seems to really be driving them to not only find a solution, but to make their three or four, as Greg says, six hives work. So they may lose two or three hives, but they are determined next year they're gonna grow some new queens. They've always got a plan to keep it going.
All right. And to my question, though, about what can we do to protect the bees, just as a backyard gardener to attract bees.
And I think that's, again, critical in North Carolina because our agriculture is set up a little bit differently than those images we conjure up about bees. North Carolina is the second most diverse state when it comes to agriculture in the United States. And so we're pretty reliant on bees. And we're not just relying on bees for commercial horticulture, but homeowner horticulture when they're growing vegetable gardens, and in urban areas where they are encouraging community gardens, we're relying on bees there too. Our commercial horticulture situation, most of those farmers are located near our urban areas, and so their bees that are pollinating their crops are also interacting with the average homeowner. And so that's where I think it's important that homeowners realize that there's a lot that they can do even if they don't have bees. The two primary things that they need to focus on, though, is their landscaping as far as the plants that are in their landscape and the pesticides that they use, how they apply pesticides in their landscape.
Very good.
Chris, well, if I could.
Sure, Dr. Tarpey.
That I think Gary really highlights something incredibly important in how effective and important cooperative extension is within this state with horticulture agents like Gary that provide really excellent expert advice about things to plant and pesticides to avoid when it comes to helping the local honeybee populations. And it's something that can empower any homeowner or anybody who has an interest in this topic.
That's Dr. David Tarpey from North Carolina State University, Associate Professor of Entomology at NC State. Gary Pierce is an extension agent with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Agency. Greg Clements, Master Beekeeper, past president of the North Carolina Beekeepers Association. If you want to join our conversations, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323 or outside Charlotte, 1-800-603-9323 or online at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Let's go to the phone lines. Paul in Morganton is calling in. Thanks for calling, Paul.
Thanks. I keep some bees here for, I guess, the past 7 years and trying to keep them alive. I do have some of the original hives from 7 years ago. And through the process, I started out using the Apistan, which most beekeepers are recommended to use to kill the mite. Since then, I changed over to using food-grade mineral oil and thymol in a fogger to treat these mites. So the comment was that there are herbal solutions, but for most people who are trying to keep them alive, they're following a chemical regime inside the hive. And then also, the same time that this collapse started, the major companies were switching to these nicotine-based pesticides. They didn't really delve into the nicotine part of that. So I was wondering if they could reemphasize the point of these pesticides using nicotine, and also the large food grade organic movement.
Very good questions, Paul. Let's get some answers here. Who wants to jump in, Dr. Tarpey?
Sure. There are many answers there, or many questions there, and I'll just try to touch on some of them briefly. I think Greg had mentioned earlier about how, you know, beekeepers in trying to address these mite problems has been a problem going on for a very long time. Paul mentioned that one of those particular compounds, to which the mites have evolved a resistance. So it's actually not recommended by many apiculturists to use those pesticides anymore, and to do exactly what Paul's doing and trying many of these integrative pest management strategies that get us away from these chemical applications for the problems that we do know about, such as these varroa mites. The other topic about these neonicotinoids and some of these other new pesticide chemistries that have been introduced, again, it's not kind of this cut and dry 2006 before and after, but it is much more of kind of an evolving landscape. But just to show how difficult it is to tie these things together, you know, the study from Penn State that Greg had mentioned earlier really didn't highlight that these neonicotinoids by themselves were the smoking gun for why all colonies in the U.S. have been having these problems.
Correct.
But that they are associated indirectly, potentially, with some of the problems that bees have been experiencing. Case in point, there have been a couple studies now that have shown that bee colonies exposed to some of these new chemistries, when they're raised with that environment, that when they grow up to be adults, that they are three times more likely to become infected with a different parasite. This is a gut parasite that infects bees, that then causes colony decline. So there's a lot of these indirect effects that are very, very difficult to tease apart.
If I could also, the public is using chemicals on their yards and flowers where they're, if you want to help the bees, you should stop, you should have weeds in your yard, you know, where bees would have a healthy environment. Every environment is controlled by man using his chemicals and sprays. And therefore, the bees are, what's killing the bees is the environment. It's obvious. We're putting thousands of chemicals on the market every year. And no one really knows the effect of those chemicals on systems, human
All right.
systems.
Very good. Paul, thanks so much for your point there. I do appreciate
Chris,
it.
If I could make a comment.
Go ahead, Gary.
A couple things. One thing relative to the neonicotine pesticides, the beauty of Europe eliminating the use of those pesticides and us not doing it is, for sure, we're going to be able to use that as one giant experiment, aren't we? And to see if that was as much of the smoking gun as they thought it was. Because since they can't use it over there, and we can, great comparison there. The other thing relative to pesticide usage, and again, I firmly believe that homeowners, this is one of those subjects when the average person listens to it and they feel like with most things they can't do anything. This is a situation where definitely every person can take action that has a landscape and has some impact and then have some impact. But the other thing to keep in mind is pesticides have been going through an evolution, there's no doubt. But in the 1950s and 60s, we actually had a lot worse pesticides on the market that were a lot more widespread damaging to all kinds of insects. The trend in pesticides, as the caller said, is more pesticides are being put on the market. They are, but a lot of them are a lot more specific than usual, and the non-target effects are actually a lot better than they ever have been in the past. And so it's kind of an illusion that more pesticides are coming out there and they're all even worse than they were before. They're actually a lot better pesticides on the market than they have been years ago.
Dr. Tarpey, I need to shift gears here and just talk in general about the pollination process, but we can go into it with, are there any other pollinators that we have out there that are being as adversely affected as the honeybees?
Thousands. Worldwide, there are about 20,000 bee species. Only 9 of them are honeybees. And I think, as Gary alluded to, they are not native to honeybees are not native to North America. They're actually brought over by the early European settlers. So even though they're our state insect, they're actually not endemic here to North Carolina. But in North America alone, there are approximately 4,000 native bee species, which in and of themselves are all of them equally important for pollination overall. Now, honeybees, of course, are the workhorse of commercial production agriculture because they can be trucked in and out of orchards and crops by, you know, the millions, you know, within hives. So they're very domesticated and easily managed. But these other native pollinators, on a bee-for-bee basis, most of them are actually more efficient pollinators and also provide that important ecosystem service that honeybees do. It's just that they're not as easily controlled or managed because they're wild. But they also are incredibly important overall to our backyard gardens and to commercial production agriculture as well.
How about other insects other than bees?
Oh, sure. There are, bees are kind of specifically designed for pollinators, right? I mean, they're vegans. Their only food source are from flowers, right? So they are really well honed to do pollination services. But there are plenty of others, even like wasp species. They drink nectar and inadvertently pollinate because of that. Butterflies. There are many different, and moths for night pollinating, for night flowering. Plant species. There's lots of different insects out there that are also important, but bees, by and large, are the main pollinators in our ecosystem.
And talking about the importance, though, of this whole pollination process, Sally writes in and asks this question, like the canary in the coal mine, do we think bees could be the sentinels for future issues for humans, other animals, or the environment? And before you answer, let me read something that's largely credited to Albert Einstein, that if the bees disappear from the surface of the globe, man would have no more than 4 years to live. Is that an oversimplification?
I think we've all heard that comment, all beekeepers, but there's never been any proof that that statement actually came from Albert Einstein, but it has been battered around for years. I will say that.
But is the statement true?
I think the statement, I don't think we will necessarily die or be eliminated because we could all eat eggs and beef and things like that, but our diet would be drastically changed. No fruit. Almost no fruit, almost no nuts, almost an elimination of at least half the vegetables out there. So, you know, that's got to play an impact on us. Definitely it's got to play an impact on us.
Is it hurting one part of the country more than another part of the country, Dr. Tarpey?
Not that we can tell.
It's pretty widespread.
It is very widespread, in large part, as our other guests had mentioned, that a lot of the honeybee population, while the majority of beekeepers as a population are smaller scale, you know, part-time beekeepers, the vast majority of the honeybees, the managed honeybees, are by these Dave Hackenbergs of the world who are moving their hives around. So we really have one large honeybee population in the U.S., so it's hard to say that one region is more or less adversely affected.
We're back with more of Charlotte Talks and our discussion about pollinators in general and honeybees in particular, right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas, blood supplier to 21 of the region's hospitals. Local donors help meet blood needs during this busy back-to-school season. CBCC.us. And Carpe Diem Restaurant and Caterers, offering full-service catering for wedding receptions, corporate events, or other life celebrations for over 23 years. More information at CarpeDiemRestaurant.com. Coming up next on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, as students head back to school, guest host Susan Page talks with Education Secretary Arnie Duncan and a panel of experts about Common Core standards, later school start times, and President Barack Obama's college rating plan. The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation today on Charlotte Talks about bees, join us now. Go to WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks to get to us. WFAE's app for iPhone, iPad, and Android keeps you connected to the latest news and your favorite NPR programs. Stream WFAE live or pause, rewind, and bookmark stories and features to listen to later. Stay in touch with your world with the free WFAE app for iPhone, iPad, and Android.
Find out more at WFAE.org.
Chris Clackham sitting in for Mike Collins. We're back with more of Charlotte Talks. Our guests today include Dr. David Tarpey, Associate Professor in the Department of Entomology at North Carolina State University, joining us by phone in Raleigh. Joining us in the studios in Chapel Hill, Gary Pierce is an extension agent with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service, and Greg Clements is a master beekeeper from Denver, past president of the North Carolina Beekeepers Association. Gary Pierce, you alluded to something a few moments ago that now the United States, because certain European countries have banned the suspect pesticide, specifically France and Germany, I think you told me, Greg.
Yes.
But Gary Pierce, in light of that, the United States has become this great big laboratory on whether or not, because those pesticides are still going to be used in the U.S. Is that your position?
That is correct. That is correct. They're used both commercially and by homeowners.
The pesticides themselves.
The neonicotine. That's right.
Let's go to the phone lines. West in Denver is calling in and ask one of the questions that I was asking earlier. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm not a beekeeper, but I have a lot of friends that are beekeepers. And one was talking about telling me that he thought and he had read a lot of material on genetically modified, fruits and vegetables and flowers. And, they thought that may be affecting it. And specifically how a lot of beekeepers were feeding their bees like corn syrup. And they found out that a lot of corn syrup had been genetically modified, to kill insects and stuff like that. So I wanted to hear what you thought about that.
Dr. Tarpey?
Well, the caller brings up several good points. And I can just say what the studies and the science have really shown. There was a meta-analysis done several years ago. This has always been, an issue that is very prominent and important. And all I can say is that most of the crops that are grown out there that have genetically modified inserts into them for pest control and protection are, as Gary had mentioned earlier, very specific to certain types of insects, such as Lepidoptera and not Hymenoptera, like honeybees. And so there have been at least 25 studies that have fed copious amounts of pollen from these genetically modified sources that bees usually don't even collect, but, feeding it to the bees to see if there's any negative health effects. And the consensus is that it really doesn't seem to have much of an effect. Now, it's very difficult to prove a negative, so it's something that I think everybody needs to stay vigilant on, but it doesn't seem to be a very high priority and something that is actively being worked on by a lot of the research groups. As far as the supplemental feed that he talked about of high fructose corn syrup being fed as a cheap sugar source to honeybees to sustain them if they're not able to collect enough honey, and that source coming from genetically modified corn, again, while high fructose corn syrup may not be the healthiest of feed to honeybee colonies, again, it doesn't seem to be transmitting with it the pesticide that is expressed in the tissues of the corn plant. So again, there has been several studies that have been looking at that. And in fact, if you need to weigh the lesser of two evils, it seems much better to make sure that the colonies are more nutritionally sound than to let them starve and die from starvation. So, again, it's a very difficult situation, but I don't think those two aspects are very strong reasons behind the overall colony problem.
Wes, thanks so much for your phone call. Let me ask this question, Dr. Tarpey. If you can genetically modify food, why can you not genetically modify the pollination process? Or is that being done?
Genetically modify the pollination process?
Well, in other words, take that pollination process and just put it in a laboratory. Quit relying upon nature.
Well, there are efforts among plant breeders to try and have outcrossing plants that require pollination to become self-crossers so that they don't require pollination. This is actively being done in the almond industry. So there is, efforts going on with that. There's also technology, believe it or not. There's two different methods that can be used to genetically modify honeybees. But nobody's ever really taken upon that technology to try to genetically modify it and become have a Frankenbee, right? Because I just don't think that the industry would really permit that.
The Frankenfish is on it. Go ahead, Greg Clements.
Well, not only do I agree with David Tarpey, but if you consider the fact that the honeybee has been on this earth at least 50 million years ago, and Homo sapiens, i.e. us, have been on this earth only about 200,000 years ago, you know, they're pretty adaptive. They do this. They've been on this earth for 50 million years with absolutely no immune system. So I'm not sure that we should be messing around with trying to create a Frankenbee.
go ahead, Gary Pierce.
Well, what I was going to say was, Chris, I wasn't sure if you were talking about genetically modifying the bee or the plants.
Yeah.
Because as Dr. Tarpey said, I mean, you know, there's two options there, not just one. But with the plants, genetic modification of the plants so they are not as reliant. But also there are some plants that are grown in greenhouses and so forth that, like tomato, for example, it's not pollinated. It's pollinated by insects when it's outside grown, but when it's inside a greenhouse, it's pollinated by hand. The problem is pollination is a mechanical process where you're transferring the pollen from one flower to another flower, and that's going to be probably cost prohibitive to do it by hand. To grow things in a greenhouse, it's going to be not a viable economic situation, but it's going to be hard to eliminate that or to modify that process so that it's not necessary anymore.
But
because that's a big step.
Gotcha. But in light of, and anybody jump in on this, in light of what is going on with our pollinators, is there research in place to replace a substantial amount of the pollination process in a man-made way?
Well, I think what they're trying to do overall is that there's a nationwide effort to really start thinking about alternatives to the current unsustainable situation of just relying so much on honeybees. There's a lot of research looking at some of those other 4,000 bee species that I talked about before to try to use them so that they can be kind of a backup plan or an alternative so that the entire burden is not placed on honeybees, which hopefully may alleviate a lot of those stressors and make it easier for all of the above.
So it's definitely possible.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely possible, but it's just going to take a lot of inputs and a lot of hard work, federal funding to try to develop a lot of these alternative systems.
One of the reasons given for CCD, colony collapse disorder, and the loss of other pollinators has to do with habitat. The loss of habitat, that's one of the official reasons given. What do they mean by loss of habitat for butterflies and the bees?
Well, I think that, again, all of the pollinators, they rely on ample and diverse forage, that is, flowers. And so as we lose lots of fallow fields that are filled with weeds. Gary mentioned earlier that if there's one thing as a homeowner that you can do to help your local bee population, not just honeybees, but all types of bees, is to let your yard go weedy. Because those weeds, often, they're flowering and they flower throughout the year. They're not manicured landscapes that do not provide any bee forage. And so just the loss of the opportunities for things for them to eat out there is very impactful for bees. So the more landscape that can be used in a natural way that can help sustain local bee populations is really, really helpful.
We've been talking mostly about there are two forms of pollination, abiotic pollination and biotic pollination. We've been talking largely about the latter. Biotic pollination, that is, animals, insects spreading the pollen around. abiotic being the wind and water. So if wind and water are big pollinators too, not as big as the biotic pollinators, but if they're still big pollinators, doesn't it stand to reason that that gets affected more by a loss of habitat, water management, and just the clearing of the tree canopy in general?
Who are you talking to, Chris?
Run that question by me again. It sounds like you're comparing
abiotic to biotic.
You see, the thing about wind pollination, you know, the trees and shrubs and things that, and grasses that use wind pollination, the pollen is a total different size, and it's built. It's little and light, and that's what usually gets your allergies. For example, whereas pollen that bees carry from flowers that are set up specifically to attract a pollinator, they're usually large grains of pollen, and that's not what's going to be affecting your allergies. So the loss of habitat is going to affect those differently. Whereas in a bee, for example, you take those native plants out, milkweed and native poplar trees and these sorts of things out of the equation, and the bee has to go further or go to lots more different places to find them. As far as an oak tree, the wind can blow that so many miles and in so many different directions that it's kind of hard to take out enough oak trees to affect their pollination.
And Gary Pierce had his doubts about what he could offer to the program today. And ladies and gentlemen, he just proved the reason why he was important to the show today. Let's go to the phone lines again. Yvette in Charlotte calling in. Thanks so much.
Yes. My question is, I have like a little home nursery where I have a lot of bees and stuff that come around. I want something. I have also cherry trees, and I went to the nursery to buy something to get rid of these bugs that they tear up the whole leaves, to eat the whole leaves up. And I just put it scantily around one of my cherry trees, and it killed it. So I'm kind of scared. I don't know what this, you know, because I do have a lot of bees that come visit my yard. I have a lot of flowers and a lot of little herbs and stuff.
Which is awesome. Yvette, Greg, any thoughts?
Not really.
Dr. Tarpey?
I put like cinnamon, I'm just putting cinnamon on my leaves, on my cherry tree leaves, and that keeps them off. But when it's the rain, of course, it blows the cinnamon off. I'm trying to use some natural.
Natural resistors.
Yes.
Got it.
So if there's something I could.
Gary?
Because I'm scared to use chemicals now.
Dr. Pierce?
Well, this year there are so many things that with the weather situations, Dr. Tarpey said this, and Greg both said this excess rain has hurt the bees because it's made it so they can't find nectar. But even worse, it's killed a lot of plants by drowning them this year. And so cherry trees especially, they're very temperamental when it comes to the situation, temperatures, humidity, diseases, insects, and even standing water. And so that just might have been a coincidence as far as you happen to have been putting the cinnamon out when it died. And, you know, I hate to say this, but sometimes I think that it's a coincidence, you know, with other things, just like the cell phones and maybe even the neonicotine pesticides, a coincidence of the GMOs, the genetically modified plants. I mean, we're reaching for straws, and I think we need to leave the research to the researchers. Dr. Tarpey and the other universities are doing great research. I think we really need to focus as far as the vast majority of millions of people of what can they do. And with how they landscape and the diversity they incorporate into their landscapes and their plants, having long blooming periods and having plants that bloom throughout the year so that if we do have a warm winter, the bees will have a place to go to get nectar. And leaving the weeds in the yards. There are so many different things that they could do just with the plants alone that I think we really need to focus a lot of attention on education and get people involved in this situation in a helpful manner.
Very good, Yvette. Thanks so much for calling in. I've got to end the program very quickly on that incident that occurred at Charlotte Douglas International Airport where a swarm of bees held up commerce. A swarm of bees ended up taking taking refuge inside one of the small tractors that's used to push the big passenger jet away from the gateway as they're getting ready to take off. And somebody at the airport said, go get some Raid, go get some pesticide, do something to kill off the swarm of honeybees. Fortunately, brighter minds and calmer minds prevailed. They went and got a beekeeper, Greg Clements.
They did. They got Jimmy Odom, who's a Mecklenburg County beekeeper, a longtime Mecklenburg County beekeeper. And actually, Jimmy's been called to the airport about five or six times every year for the past several years due to bees. You know, the honeybee is the North Carolina state insect. So you can't just treat that honeybee with pesticides or something that'll kill it. And if you call a company that gets rid of bees and pests and things like that, the first thing they'll tell you is, go get a beekeeper. We won't touch the honeybees.
But isn't that pretty much a testament to just how important this little pollinator is to our society?
Absolutely.
And our way of life, Dr. Tarpey?
I can't agree more. In fact, I think it's a testament to what Gary was saying about education. And if there is a silver lining to CCD hitting the media headline, it's that bees are important. And I think that's actually a really positive message.
Dr. David Tarpey, associate professor from NC State University. Greg Clements is a master beekeeper, past president of the Beekeepers Association in North Carolina. Gary Pierce with the North Carolina Extension Service. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Chris.
And thank you for listening to Charlotte Talks on listener-funded public radio, WFAE.